You know what time it is. Episode 446 here on the Flip Empire Show.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Before we dive into today's masterclass expert interview, I want to let you know that this show is sponsored by Ascend, our in-house assembly of success-minded people, business owners, and entrepreneurs actively collaborating together to ascend our businesses to new heights while also experiencing truly happier, more fulfilling lives at the same time. We believe it's not an either-or, but you can truly have both and. It's the unique and rare combination of mastermind coaching and community that makes Ascend so special. But it's definitely not for everyone. If you're an entrepreneur who's looking for more than your typical mastermind or coaching, and you think these things can help you accelerate your ascension from where you are today to where you want to go, while living a more meaningful and rewarding life in the process, then you can head over to ascendyoursuccess.com, click the application button, and we'll go from there. Hey, hey, this is Alex here. Welcome to another masterclass. And I got my boy, Mr. Tim Brotz, the multifamily legend in the house. Guys, Tim, if you're not following him on Facebook, you definitely need to because as you're about to hear, I mean, he's such a go-giver. He's always sharing information. And not only is he sharing it, but the guy walks the walk. And to the tune of, he has gone, you're about to hear in this episode, Tim's holding company owns over 4,000 multifamily units, 4,005 units to be exact. And in 2017, when Tim and I first struck up a friendship and a relationship, he owned about 130, 140. So from 2017 until now, he's basically added roughly about 3,850 units. How in the heck did he do that? We talk about that in detail. And then I answer a lot of user questions. You know, one of the questions I asked him was knowing what he knows now, what would he go back and do different? We talked about abundance. We talked about masterminds. We talked about mindset and personal development. I'm just looking through the list here. There's so much that we cover, building legacy wealth. What are some of his biggest failures and the biggest lessons he's learned? Wholesaling multifamily is a question and a topic that we dive into. Tim shares a story about the worst deal he's ever done. We talk about, you know, Tim, as of the last year or so, started acquiring some storage units as a passive investor. And as a passive investor, and somebody had a question about, hey, you know, why are you even looking at storage versus just focusing on what you're really, really good at, which is multifamily? So we talk about that. And then an interesting part of this podcast was, you know, Tim is building an empire here. And can you build an empire and not sacrifice life and time with family and the things that are important to most of us, which is freedom? Can you build an empire and also not sacrifice? In other words, can you have both? And the answer might surprise you. So without further ado, let's dive into episode 446, masterclass here with my buddy Tim Brotz. Tim, my man, I believe we are live. You ready to rock and roll, bro?
Yeah, born ready. You kidding me?
I love it, dude. I love it. You're one of those people that I feel like you're such a natural at these Facebook Lives. Every time I see you catching, hopping on a Facebook Live, I'm like, this dude's about to drop gold, man. So the engagement that you get, it's funny, before we get going here, I wasn't even planning on doing a Facebook Live. And this morning it hit me. I'm like, why would I not this thing live, man? Because, you get so much awesome engagement and it's because you're always providing value, dude. So before we get going, I just want to publicly recognize you for someone who, you walk the walk, you're a straight shooter, and you're just, you're always delivering, man. And now you're helping a lot of people through Commercial Empire and everything you got going on. So it's exciting to have you on, man.
I appreciate you, man. Like, I don't know if you know this, but I think your podcast is the first podcast I've ever been on.
You're kidding me.
I think so. I remember when we reached out, connected, 2.5, 3 years ago or something like that. We first... it had to be 3 years ago, man. It was before CG, because I got into CG. off of your referral. So hopefully Medley paid you. I know he's a little bit, you know, with those alligator arms when he's at dinner.
we'll leave Medley alone, man. There we go.
Well, no, but hey, real quick, man, I gotta give you some love too, man, because I can't tell you how many people I'm like, oh yeah, I'm on Pardo's podcast, or oh yeah, like your name would come up in conversation. They're like, dude, what a genuinely amazing human being Alex Pardo is. Is there anybody who is a better human being than Alex Pardo? Dude, and that's a standard across the board, everybody who knows you, man. So
thank you, man.
We appreciate you. We love you. And it's an honor for me to be here, man. So thank you.
I really, really appreciate that. Well, my friends, I appreciate you guys here. If you have any questions, I got several questions I want to ask Tim. Like I mentioned in the post, he's a straight shooter. So anything you guys want to know, we want to make this interactive. We want to have some fun here for the next hour. So whether it's on, you know, wealth building, multifamily, storage investing, parenting, I mean, we can cover all sides of the spectrum here. So, yep. And a bunch of people have already commented and put a bunch of questions. Kia Charles, my friend, Alex and Tim, whoop, whoop. So any questions you guys have, we want to answer them here. But you know what's interesting, Tim? I started this live talking about your Facebook Lives and the content you put out. What prompted me to reach out to you, dude, 3 years ago, and I'll never forget this, and it has changed the way I think about things, is you were in freezing cold Cleveland, which I think is where you're at now, although it's not cold. I know you're moving here in about a month, which is exciting. And I remember you put out a video about wanting to attend the Cavs finals game, right? Or maybe it was the conference finals. And you know, your ticket guy reached out to you and it was like 30 grand for the game or something like that. And your immediate instinct was like, hell no, I can't afford that. Or why would I drop 30 grand in a game? It's insane. And then you started asking different questions and you started asking basically, how do I get others to pay for this? And how can I add value at the same time? And when I saw that video, you came across so genuine, and it shifted something in me, because I think oftentimes as entrepreneurs, we're not thinking big enough. And sometimes we're like throwing up mental roadblocks and barriers that shouldn't even be there. Talk a little bit about that, about the power of asking the right questions. And that as an example, how you turned that into a mastermind that helped a bunch of people. And then you got to experience that with others.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I think it's a great point to be made. I think, on my journey of trying to move towards abundance and stuff, and not really knowing that that's what I was trying to do, was and I've always kind of had this characteristic of, when you tell yourself something, it shuts off your creative juices. You know what I mean? Like you make a statement and your brain stops working. When you ask a question, it stimulates brain activity and it stimulates more questions or an answer to those questions or better questions. And you go down this path of stream of consciousness and you start coming up with more detailed type stuff. So I've always been a big believer in asking yourself questions, because then it's going to lead to a better answer. And the better the question, the better the answer. It's kind of like Google. You know, you search restaurants and it brings up every single restaurant in the country. You search Italian restaurants in Parkland, Florida, right? Like all of a sudden it's only Italian restaurants down in that community. And it's a better question, which means it's going to give you a more narrowed answer and a better answer. And so I've done this when I first started flipping houses. Like I started flipping in 2009 and nobody's lending a punk 23-year-old kid any money in the worst housing market ever. Right. And so they're like, listen, man, the only person lending me money was MasterCard. And so I legitimately called up MasterCard. I was like, how can I get more money? And they're like, well, we can increase your limit. I was like, great. I need $100,000. They're like, no, like you've been a good customer for 15 months, but that's about it. And we'll give you $15,000 though. And I was like, done. And I bought a house out of $15,000 credit card. So that's always kind of been a mindset piece of mine, is like kind of that resourcefulness that comes from it. Right. A lot of people say, hey, I don't have the time, the money, the connections, the resources. Well, Tony Robbins, I heard him say once, is like, resourcefulness is the ultimate resource. If you can go out, if you're resourceful, you can find the money, you can find the time, you can find the resources. And so, on that, that was in May of 2017 or something like that. When the Cavs were going to the Eastern Conference Finals against Boston, and my suite guy calls me, or my season ticket guy calls me. He's like, hey man, we got one suite left for the Eastern Conference Finals, 30 G's, you want it? And I was like, I think it was actually like an email. And I was like, oh my gosh, what kind of idiot would spend 30 grand on a basketball game? Delete. And then all of a sudden, like I started thinking on my thoughts. You know, this is one thing that like Mark Evans and I always think about, and like, think about your thoughts and reflect on that. And some of the most successful people, the most successful people that I know, are very reflective people. And they think about that.
Thought auditing.
thought auditing. Exactly. And I was like, well, dude, there's only one suite left. Obviously somebody's spending money on these suites. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it's people with a bunch of money and they, like, they have a lot of money. I don't have that much money. So they must know something that I don't know. Like, what do they know? What are they doing? It's probably for a corporate retreat. Maybe it's something different. They're getting other people. Like, and I was like, man, like, let's ask myself a question instead of telling myself I can't do something or it's stupid to do that. And I was like, how can I turn this into a business expense? And then that led me into how can I turn it into getting other people to pay for this? And I realized that, you know, it was 15 tickets or something like that to the suite. And so I'd have to sell tickets for $2,000 a piece in order to break even. And I'm thinking, dude, it's hard to get somebody to stroke a check for $2,000 to go to a basketball game, right?
Yeah.
But what if I married it up with a mastermind and there's additional value to coming to the mastermind, and then there's a tangible value of going to the basketball suite? And dude, I made seven phone calls and I went 7 for 7 of people saying, I'm in. And I probably only contacted, I don't know, a little over 20 people, and I got 15 people to commit to going out to this thing. So not only was I able to pay for the suite, but all of a sudden Tim's the man, right? Because I'm the one who put everything together. So I'm in this edified, credible position. And then all of a sudden I'm getting tagged on social media and other people are reaching out. It created this compound effect.
Yeah.
Not only that, dude, but like the mastermind was just supposed to pay for this event. You know what else it did? It turned my attorney into a private money lender who then loaned me $700,000 on a deal 2 months later.
Incredible.
And then he came in-house a year and a half after that. And now he's my in-house chief investment officer.
Awesome guy, by the way. Awesome guy. I love him.
Yeah, you know Fatty. Yeah. So, and not only has it helped me out, it's helped him out. Dude, he's increased his net worth by over multiple seven figures in the past 18 months. He's been working with me, right? And he's made more money of actual cash also than he's ever made as an attorney. And so like, dude, that wouldn't have happened if I didn't ask myself a question. So now all of a sudden I'm thinking, dude, who am I robbing of opportunities for not going bigger? Like I'm robbing opportunities from other people that I can be making a bigger impact on because I'm thinking too small. And I think, you know, guys like us, when we have the ability to do some amazing things and we have, you know, social influence and we have following like crowds and people who look up to us, I think, dude, we got an ability to make an impact. We have a responsibility to make an impact from it too.
I couldn't agree with you more, Tim. Have you ever thought to yourself, going back, had you not shifted the way that you thought about it, and had you not said, well, how can I experience this, add value to others, and get others to pay for it? Had you not had that first mastermind, which, forget the game, it paid for the game and you got to enjoy that. But to your point, you know, it brought on now your COO, somebody who invested a bunch of money in a deal, and now you guys have grown exponentially, right? We're going to talk about how you went from zero to 3,200 plus units or whatever it is. What would life be like for you had you not shifted your mind in that one instance?
Man, I think, you know, I think it's a matter of time. It would have eventually occurred. It just would have taken more time. You know, I mean, it's being in groups like Collective Genius and Mark's DM family and a bunch of the other different, like I'm in 5 masterminds and I run 2, right? So I'm in 7 mastermind groups. That's how much I believe in masterminds. And it's because of going to groups like that, that I have these breakthroughs, that I have these recognitions and cognitive advancements, I would say, you know, where I go after and it stimulates your thinking. It just kind of gets you thinking around different people and another level, another way. So I think because I was already in masterminds, eventually it would have happened. But it didn't, like, I was in a mastermind since 2015. And if I didn't get involved in a mastermind earlier, I think it would have taken even longer, right? To come to that conclusion on my own. So, you know, it's hard to say, you know, what could life have looked like?
Right.
But, you know, all the decisions, everything that we do, the people we decide to surround ourselves with, the books we decide to read or not read, the people we decide to put around ourselves or not put around us, you know, the decisions we make, all those things lead us to exactly where we are in life, right? Like bad stuff happens to all of us every single day.
Yep.
And it's like Jim Rohn says, like the same wind blows on us all, right? Like if we're little sailboats out in the sea, the same wind blows on us all. How come one sailboat can win a race over another sailboat? It's the same wind.
So true.
Dude, it's not the wind. The same economic winds, the same political winds, the same relational winds, financial winds, all those different winds blow on us all. The difference is it's not the wind that you got to hope gets better and make better. It's like wish for the wisdom to set a better sail. So that way you can utilize any wind that blows to take you wherever you want to go. And it's up to you, right? Like you have to take 100% ownership over this stuff.
Yeah. And I think you hit the nail on the head there at the end, Tim. I don't see enough people accepting accountability and responsibility for where they're at, you know, and I see too many people looking back and just not taking ownership that you're at in your life where you're supposed to be based on your decisions. And once you start accepting responsibility and accountability for your actions or lack thereof, it gives you the ability to move forward and create a plan, because looking back can only do you so good. But you got to be really present, and you got to just, again, I think if you accept responsibility for where you're at, that's what's going to allow you to move forward. Too many people are either pointing the finger or they're looking back at like, what if? You know, could have done this, could have done that. I want to talk about 0 to 3,200. Do I have that number right? 3,200 units? It's more? Four? You hit the 4K?
I'm at 4,005 units.
Wow. So when you and I first connected 2017, let me start to kind of tie in and just weave in parts of this podcast episode and this live. When I reached out to you 2017, how many units did you own at the time?
I don't know, man. A few hundred.
A few hundred. So a few hundred to 4,000 in 3 years. Some people are asking how.
Dude, the snowball starts with a little bit, right? And then all of a sudden it gets momentum and it grows exponentially thereafter. Like, it looks like it only happened in 3 years, but it's really been 15 years of, you know, getting kicked in the groin and getting screwed by contractors, having bad breakups with employees, pressing the reset button twice in my life, financially. It's been, you know, a lot of struggle, a lot of tenants, you know, tearing up units, buildings burning down. It's been insurance policies not paying out. It's been over and over and over again, man, of stuff like that happening. And you just refine and you get a little bit better and a little bit better and a little bit better. And then, dude, it just all of a sudden it clicks. And I've been screwed so many times that I can't get screwed anymore, right? Like, you can't pull the wool over my eyes. I know exactly what to expect in an apartment building when I'm buying it, because I have checklists. I have SOP, standard operating procedures, in place. I have process maps. I have everything dialed in where, like, even if, like, the only way that I can get burned is if a seller, like, defrauded me and gave me fake financials and all these things. And even then, because it's happened to me before, I know how to negate that, right? Like, I have it in my contract that if all of a sudden you gave me fake financials and I find out about it after I close on it, guess what? I can come back to you. It's called, whatchamacallit in the contract. Oh my gosh. It's a clause that we have in every single contract. Whenever the seller wants to take it out, I was like, that's a deal breaker for me. It's
incredible.
Representations and warranties.
There you go. It's what Malcolm Gladwell talks about in The Tipping Point, right? And for you, it sounds like, you know, it was a culmination of all the adversity, all the failures. You know, you talk about having to hit the reset button on your financials twice, your finances, and you probably would not have been the place you are today. So people only see the shine, but they don't see like what you had to go through to get there, right? Because you got started in this business, I think when I did, 2005, right?
Yeah, I started, I was in real estate. I didn't really start investing until 2009, but I was in real estate. I had a landscaping business and a painting company. And then I worked for a big home builder as an intern. And then I worked as a broker for a year. And then, and then I got into wholesaling and stuff and all that in 2008, 2009.
What do you find is holding people back specifically when it comes to, and this can apply to anything, whether it's single family, whether it's commercial or just achieving success in business? Do you find, you know, I see you now on stage pretty, at least pre-COVID, you know, pretty frequently with Commercial Empire and everything you're doing there on the Facebook Lives and your podcast, just constantly putting out valuable information. What do you find is holding people back from succeeding? Are they quitting too early? Does it just boil down to mindset? What would you boil it down to?
Yeah. I mean, we live in the age of information, right? Like, there is an abundance of information out there. You can get everything that I put out that I have at Commercial Empire, like my live event. It can all be found on the internet for free also, right? It's just, if you want it all organized, then you come out to Commercial Empire. So like, the information's out there and I'm not the only real estate coach, and there's a lot of people, there's amazing podcasts and so many different places. So it's not the information that's holding people back, right? It's what are you doing with the information? So the action that you're taking, and it's two pieces of action. One is the ambition to start, right? And two is the perseverance to stay. And I see a lot of people, dude, everybody, first of the year, I'm going to lose weight, I'm going to make more money. right? Okay. And for the next 30 days, dude, they're going to the gym for really probably not even 30 days, probably 2 weeks, yeah. right? And everybody then falls off. Right? Everybody's got the ambition. They have the excitement to get started, but not the perseverance to stay, man. And what I found is every time you jump into a different business or a different asset class or a different whatever ends up being, dude, there's always a learning curve. The yeah. hardest work comes with getting it off the ground.
Mm.
Like real statistic, it takes, if you're on a 2-hour flight from Miami to Charleston, South Carolina, right?
Yep.
Your house to mine. And if you're on a 2-hour flight, it takes 50% of the fuel is taken off, is used up on the first 15 minutes of takeoff.
It's incredible.
The other 50% is on the next, what is that? 75%, no, more than that, 87.5% of that flight time. So a majority of the work, and that's like in business, majority of the work comes from the takeoff, comes from the launch. That's where all the effort has to go in. And that's where a lot of people just don't push through. Once you get past that, dude, it's really easy to build a big business. That's why once I dialed it in, I had it figured out, and I got up to 1,000 units, dude, I got to 4,000 within 24 months from that. And if you took all my units away, I would have 4,000 units back within 18 to 24 months.
I have zero doubt about it. And you know what? The other thing that we're not really talking about that I see from my perspective, Tim, and I think others would agree, knowing you the way I do, and then looking at your social media and what you're putting out, brother, you're enjoying the journey. It's not all about the destination. Like, I truly see you enjoying what you're doing, impacting people's lives. And man, for me, for years, it was all about the destination. I set a goal and I wasn't happy until I achieved that goal. But that's not sustainable, man. That's just, it's so short-lived to hit a goal. Mm-hmm. And then we're naturally rewired to be like, okay, what's next? What's the next mountain that we're going to conquer? It's all about the journey. The journey is the destination. Mm-hmm. And I see you living that.
Big time, big time. Yeah, man. I mean, for me, like, listen, when you, money is a big driver when you don't have any money. Right. Mm-hmm. When you don't know where the food's coming from, where you don't know if you're going to have a safe place to rest your head, your family's head, you don't know how you're going to put clothes on your kids' back. Like, money's a driver. That's a big stressor. Yeah. But once you get past a certain dollar amount, I'm not only into like wealth and real estate, but I'm big into like happiness and lifestyle. And I study all this stuff. And I remember watching a documentary on happiness and said that there's no difference once those basic needs are met in somebody's like how much money they make. Mm-hmm. Once those basic needs are met and they hit $50,000, that's about the average across the country. Some markets might be a little higher, but once you make about $50,000 a year and you know, those basic needs are met, it doesn't matter if you make $50,000 or $50 million a year, there's no difference in happiness. Yeah. So how do you, all right, so now all of a sudden I go beyond $50,000, but I'm still not happy. So I know that there's something going on when there's so many studies that have been done about this, like it's gotta be something inside, not outside, that's gonna create this happiness for me. And dude, for me, I think the two biggest drivers of happiness that bring happiness is like here's the secret, right? Here's the secret sauce to happiness. Being present, mm-hmm. being thankful. Before we got on the line here, before we went live, I said, dude, what's going on with you? How's your family? You asked me the first, actually. I tell you, dude, everything's amazing. I'm so thankful for what we've got. And you said, dude, we're blessed. Everything's amazing. And even though there's struggles, even though, hey, you were supposed to go to Europe for 3 weeks for your 40th birthday, couldn't do it. COVID-19 hits. So you go down to the Keys for 3 weeks instead, you know? And, you know, same thing with a lot of our businesses. Like, dude, that's a good problem to have, you know? Yeah. If that's your biggest struggle in your life, like just being grateful, being thankful, and being thankful for having the mindset that you have, being thankful for being on this podcast right now, me being here, you interviewing me, and all these people watching and getting good insights, like they should be thankful for getting this insight. This isn't something that's readily out there. I'm thankful for you for having me. So like, I think having gratitude for what you do have, focus on what you do have, instead of realizing that like, it's not out there. I promise you it's not out there, because I've hit some of the goals and I had the Mercedes and I had all this other stuff and it wasn't fulfilling whatsoever. I was like you get there and it's cool for an instant. And then you're like, this is it. And so it needs to be something bigger than that. It's like, and for me, it's just turned into more of an impact piece. It's like, how many lives can I change? How many people can I impact? How many, dude, I legitimately want to create at least a million millionaires. I want people to go out there and make millions and millions of dollars and like impact their family trees forever because of the information that I'm willing to give. And yeah. Maybe, like, if I can do some deals out of it, awesome. If I don't, and they get crazy rich and they write a book because they became a billionaire and they're like, oh, it all started because I was listening to Pardo and Bratz's podcast one time. Like, dude, that's enough for me. That's an amazing, amazing sentiment. And that's the kind of stuff that feeds
the soul. Tim, what you're saying resonates with me so much because I don't know if you know this, brother, but about a couple of months ago, I made the decision after a while to exit the wholesaling operation because it wasn't feeding me anymore. It wasn't in alignment with my vision. And I shared this with some people, brother. I genuinely get more joy and satisfaction and fulfillment from someone reaching out to me, telling me that a particular podcast episode or something I did impacted them positively than I was from closing a $20,000 or $30,000 deal. And that's the God's honest truth. And it was just a sign for me that I need to do more of this and less of what is taking energy from me. Mm-hmm. And I think that doesn't happen if you're not intentional about creating a kind of life that you want. So let's talk a little bit about lifestyle, because to your point, you said this, it's not just about acquiring thousands and thousands of units and having as much cash flow as possible. That's a part of it, but that's just a tool. It's because we want to live a certain lifestyle, because we want to impact people's lives. At what point in the journey for you, Tim, was it about other people? Because to your point, you know, people that might be watching this that are struggling financially, like, that's a real thing. When you're struggling financially, it seems to be for a lot of people, that's all you can think about because you haven't gotten that piece solved. Mm-hmm. But at what point for you, was it about, was this always the way that you thought and felt that, hey, I want to impact people's lives? Or was there a point where it's like, hey, I got to get this money piece figured out before I can start to pour into other people's lives?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I've always had, like, my mom's been a full-time volunteer since I was born. Like, she's never worked, but she was always full-time in the schools, president of the school board, like all that kind of stuff. And so there's always been like a philanthropic, like, give back element that's been ingrained in me since I was really young. So I've always wanted to do that. But dude, when you don't have the oxygen on yourself, how can you help anybody else?
That's right.
And I was, I remember going through that, and eventually, though, what really clicked for me was about 2017 ish, 2015. I had some good stuff going on, right? Like, most people would be like, "Oh, you had 140 units, and that's cool."
Yeah.
I had a bad partnership; it broke up, and it was like 15, 16, 17 is where I really got into my stride, and I think it came from, like, first of all, it wasn't outside. It was like inside. You gotta realize that you're not going to get anointed worthy by somebody else, right? Like, you need to be like, no, man, I've paid my dues. I've done, put in the effort and, you know, it's my time now. It's kind of a thing. And that was a big piece, right? And realizing that you cannot make a big impact thinking small. You cannot make a big impact.
So true.
If you don't make any money. Like, the more money you make, the bigger impact you can make. The more people you influence, the more impact. Like, it's directly correlated. And so when I started realizing that, and it didn't just like hit, man. I think I'm very confident today, right? And I've always been pretty confident in my life, but there was always like a, you know, I felt like a phony or a fake because I had to like make it first or like
imposter syndrome.
100%, you know, and that's good. Never heard it called that, but that's how I felt, right? Yeah. And I think you gain a little bit more of that confidence by these little victories. And that's why you just got to stick with it and just keep on having little victories, little wins. And I started mentoring. I mentored my first guy in like 2015. The guy paid me $5,000 for 90 days of coaching. And dude, it was a little bit, it wasn't really the blind leading the blind, but it was like the one-eyed man leading the blind, right? Like, I didn't.
You're probably not giving yourself enough credit, but I get what you're saying.
And what's amazing is like that same guy hits me up with a message. I don't know, every 3 to 6 months today, and being like, "Dude, it changed my trajectory. It really opened me up." Or like he got in, and I was like, "Man, I didn't even know what I was doing or knew what I was talking about." And so I think everybody who's on this and who's listening, I think we all sell ourselves short for what value that we can bring to the market, and you got to realize, like, between that and another time that I first started posting on social media, I posted like, "Hey guys, I'm looking for houses where it could be all in for 65 cents of the dollar, purchase price, renovation costs." Dude, standard formula in real estate investing, right? Yep. Like, everybody knows that formula. And there were people with like mind blown emojis that commented on this, like, dude, that was the missing piece. Thanks so much. Oh, it's amazing. And I was like, this isn't standard knowledge that people know this all. Like, and so it just resonated with me where there's people that I think is common knowledge that everybody knows. And there's people who are like, have no idea. And that could be, they could have, you know, four numbers on the lock dialed in. And all of a sudden you just gave them the, or, you know, the fifth one, and it opens up the floodgates for them. And I was like, you know, I just need to start doing more social media. Let me just start putting it out there. And when I started putting it out there on social media, and I just be, you know, I had my phone walking a property. Hey guys, I'm walking this property. Here's the flooring and here's the paint, the fixtures. And I just share, right? Yeah. Like not expecting anything. And all of a sudden people are like, dude, thank you. Oh my gosh, this was amazing. Hey, by the way, I want to buy something. Are you selling anything? Hey, by the way, I'm selling this. Do you want to buy this? Hey, by the way, do you want to joint venture? Hey, Tim, I have some money. Can I lend it to you? Hey, Tim, can I pay you to coach me? And that's what turned into the whole coaching thing. Wow. Is like, I said no to a lot of people for a long time. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, Dolmar and those guys. And so I ended up partnering up with those guys on the education side. And it's been cool. They've been focused on that. I just keep on doing my deals. Then I show up and I speak and we, and I get more deal flow from it and I'm able to help other people out. And there's a lot of people who come out and get the information, can go out and do their own, deals. But then there's other people who are like, dude, great. I got the information. I can go find a deal, but like, I still need the money. I still need access to a balance sheet. I still need whatever. And so it's a cool way that I can still help people in that capacity. So, and listen, man, I think everybody, like we want to be givers, but that doesn't mean that there's not a self-serving element to it. Like you get fed, it feeds your soul.
That's right.
Because you get good messages. So like you want to do more of it because it makes you feel good. That's
it's kind of selfish in a way.
It is totally selfish, right? Yeah. Like it's perceived to be selfish, but like that's how it needs to be that way. That's how we are, you know, ingrained as individuals is there needs to be a selfish element to it. Like, it makes me feel good, right? Is that wrong?
There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, by the way. It's totally normal, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't even know how I got off on this tangent, but
no, I love it, dude. Well, here's what I want to do, man. I want to pop over to Facebook and I want to ask you some questions that were already thrown out beforehand. So, guys, if you are live on this and you have any questions, fire away. There's a couple of that I see here, so we'll get to you. Our boy Obi Dorsey. A legend interviewing a legend. Obi's awesome, dude. So knowing what you know now, what would you do different if you go back in time and do it again?
I definitely would have joined a mastermind earlier.
Okay.
That was, dude, I was just a solopreneur banging my head against the wall for so long. And I was like, it's one of these things. You can't see the picture when you're inside the frame.
That's right.
You know what I mean by that? Like you cannot... I didn't know what my problem was. And I would see these big businesses being built. And I was like, how the hell is that possible? How do people do that? I can't figure this out. Like, it's because I was doing the day to day and I couldn't get outside of my box to even have a 20,000 foot view. And going to a mastermind opened me up. It just opened up my mind. It opened me up to like, and made it a not big deal, right? Like to me, hiring an employee, when I just made six figures, first time I ever made six figures was 2014. Yep. Okay. And in 2015, February 2015, I go out to a mastermind. They're like, you need to hire an assistant to get all this garbage off your plate, right? So you can focus on revenue generating activities, Tim. Mm-hmm. And I was like, bro, that's like $35,000, $40,000 a year. I just made a little over 100 G's last year. Like, I can't possibly. And you want me to join your mastermind? It's another $30,000. You just took over half my money, right? Like, there's no way. He's like, listen. It's not $35,000 a year, it's $3,000 a month. And you hire somebody for $3,000 a month for the next 2 months, and you see how it works. Can you invest $6,000 in that? And if it doesn't work, dude, you let them. Hey, it's not working. You go back to banging your head against the wall. Can you be in a worse position than you're in right now? $6,000. Like, I was like, yeah, I guess that's a different way of looking at it. They're like, dude, it's six.
All perspective.
Three G's. What? And they're like shrugging their shoulders at me and talking to me like I'm an idiot. And then I felt like it. I was like, yeah, I'm in my own way. Like we are always our own bottleneck, you know? And so I come back, hire an assistant. And all of a sudden the next 10 months I made $400,000. Right. And I'm like, how many people can I hire? Right. And then all of a sudden I overhire everybody. And you realize that the reason that most businesses go out of business is because lack of cash flow, which comes from having too much overhead. And the number one cost of overhead is overhiring, too much staff. And so here's the thing. I was in a mastermind though. And as you hit these different levels in business, there's other levels of problems like that. And
no doubt.
And it helps you like assess the situation and respond to the situation in a very quick manner because you're getting third party outside perspective instead of you having to figure it out on your own and costing you time and costing you money. So joining a mastermind, dude, I attribute a lot of my growth. I don't know, 80% of my growth to being in a mastermind. I think the reason I'm on the trajectory that I've been on is because I'm in so many masterminds.
As do I. And a quick follow-up that I'm curious, did you not, up until that point, did you not join a mastermind because fear of investing of yourself? Was it a money thing? Was it you just didn't know what you didn't know? It was money?
It's a cost, man. It's a cost, right? At least it's a cost before you get into it.
It's an investment.
Dude, anybody who's been to a mastermind realizes it's an investment.
Yeah.
What's hard is educating somebody and letting them know, hey, it's not a cost. It is an investment. And realizing that in an investment, you see a return on your investment, meaning you're going to make more money. So now I'm like, dude, how much money can I invest in marketing? How much money can I invest in a mastermind?
That's right.
Because I know the more money I invest in that, the more money I'm going to be able to make, the bigger impact I'm going to be able to make because I'm going to have a better return. Right. So, dude, it's like, it's almost addicting because once you realize the kind of return and the relationships and everything that comes with it, you're always like, where's another mastermind? How can I
go? Yeah.
I'm in too many. I should scale back, but I like going out to a couple one-offs and then I like having a core of a handful of masterminds that I go to on a regular basis.
And Tim, the relationships that you build within a mastermind are priceless, man. I mean, some of my closest friends are from masterminds and it's so valuable to me to be able to pick up the phone and be able to call you or be able to call somebody else and be like, dude, here's my challenge. What do you think? And within 5-10 minutes, I'm set straight and I'm thinking different. Like, so, you know, the access you have to just other people's, how they're wired and their mindset is just, it's priceless. I don't know where we'd be without a mastermind. So, all right, cool. A couple other things. This one's a little bit vague, but I'm curious. Jonathan Collins, ask him to explain abundance.
Yeah. And then he put the sunshine there, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So my analogy for abundance is like people are like, and a lot of coach, and listen, dude, I understand that there's a lot of bad coaches out there, just like there's a lot of bad real estate agents, right? Just like there's a lot of bad investors, just like there's a lot of bad politicians. But then there's also good ones, and there's good coaches, and there's good mentors, and there's good realtors, and there's good investors, and there's good politicians, and there's good politicians, right? But there's good, and so I get it, and it's especially being in real estate coaching, and there's a lot of you know, kind of fly by night type people out there who aren't really doing deals and they're just coaching. Yep. So like, I've gotten a lot of flack for being a coach, right? People are like, if he's making so much money in real estate, why is he coaching? Why is he doing this? Or why is he doing that? And dude, I get it. And I don't even get mad about it because I totally understand. Cause, one of the things you gotta realize is, dude, it's actually easier to make money in coaching than it is in single family investing.
No doubt. 100%.
Like that's a secret that a lot of people don't realize, but it's easier to coach people and make
$300,000,
$400,000, $500,000 a year, up to $1 million a year in coaching than it is to do that in residential flipping without any of the liability over here, right? Mm-hmm. Without any of the response. And so the difference in commercial though, dude, I'm dealing with big numbers, you know, like my net worth increased by 8 figures last year. So even though I made several hundred thousand dollars in coaching, like it's a drop in the bucket compared to what doing deals does. So I still go out and I do deals. But the education platform allows me to do more deals. So like, why would you coach people and tell people about what you do and how you do it and give away all your secrets? Here's why. Because I don't create, this is abundant minds. I don't think I'm creating competitors, right? That's scarcity. I think I'm creating collaborators and joint venture partners. And there's more to go around and 1 + 1 = 3.
Yes.
In that regard. And so for me, dude, like I don't think there's a limit to wealth. I think wealth can be created. I don't think it just transfers. I think, you know, if you own a property over here and then I buy the lot next door and I build a mansion, it increases your property's value.
100%.
Right. And my property, I put sweat equity in and all of a sudden it's worth so much more money. Like there's wealth that can be created out of nowhere. So like there's an abundance of wealth. And so what John Collins is saying is like, to me, wealth is like sunshine. There's no limit. Like you getting sunshine, Pardo, takes no sunshine away from me. Right? So you making wealth and generating wealth takes no wealth away from me. In fact, we'll probably generate more wealth and create more wealth together because I share with you, you share with me, and we figure out a way to work together on some stuff.
And you know what's another thing I'll add about abundance is, and I find people struggle with this if they're honest with themselves, because I've had some intimate conversations with people. When I see you winning, Tim, I'm genuinely happy for you. Like, and I think a lot of people struggle where it's envy or maybe in some cases jealousy. Like, and I think that's a part of abundance, is that you should want to see, in my opinion, my humble opinion, you should want others, whether you have a relationship with them or not. I want others to win. And I feel like when you win, it inspires me. I'm thinking different. I'm asking myself, well, what do I need to do to get to the next level? Or how can I, you know what I mean? And I think a lot of people, if they're honest with themselves, is there's a little bit of envy at play, and you got the haters out there. And so part of abundance is wanting others to win as well.
And I think it's a muscle you got to exercise, right? Like, I think we're almost trained to, like, dude, we're trained from a young age to compete, you know, and play sports and compete, and you got to win, and there's got to be a winner and there's got to be a loser. And that's okay. Like, I love sports, dude. I friggin' love competing as well. But I think in the game of money, there's an abundance of it. I think there's no limitation to it. And it's a muscle that you have to exercise once in a while. You know, and I see people talking about doing deals, and even me, like, initially I was like, well, because there are some fakes out there too, which really that's what bothers me is the people who aren't really doing deals, or they're not doing deals to that extent, and they're making offers on properties and pretending like they closed on properties in order to get coaching clients and stuff. Right. Come on.
Yeah, that's just shady. Yep.
Got it. So you know, I mean, but there's an abundance of wealth, and dude, it's like sunshine, helping other people, supporting other people. And dude, I think you are the epitome of this, of like, you're always supporting other people. And that's why you're winning, because everybody wants to support you. Like, if you called me up, Pardo calls me up, dude, I answer my phone, right? And so there's so many people that have that amount of respect for you because you're in everybody's corner, man. You're liking, you're promoting. I see Paul Vincent, he does the exact same thing. Bo Hollis does a lot of supporting of other people on social media, and, you know, giving uplifting messages. And because of that, people want to do business with them more.
Yeah, completely agree with you, Tim. Here's an interesting one. Brendan Daly. You know Brendan? He's a storage investor. Good guy. I'll connect you with him. Okay. Brendan's a really good dude. Two questions. Why are you moving into storage versus being laser focused and being great at apartments, which obviously you are great at apartments. And then I'll ask you the second one here, and then you could tackle these. I'm not sure how familiar you are with Life and Air and you know, what they teach, but what is your why for building a large empire versus more of a Life and Air, a lifestyle Life and Air mindset?
Great questions, dude. And yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm friends with Brendan on Facebook. I don't think we've had the opportunity to meet together though, but I'd love to meet you guys. So question number one, why don't I focus just on multifamily? I will say that 90% of my portfolio is multifamily. Another 7% is self-storage. Okay. Another 3% of a bunch of crap that I bought that I just got my ass handed to me. A bunch of vacation rentals, some office, some retail, stuff like that. That, you know, you get into these new asset classes and then all of a sudden you learn, which means you lose money and lose time. Yeah. And great question though. So I and my team are laser focused on multifamily, but we are money guys. I'm transitioning more into a money position where now, I'm liquidating almost half of my portfolio, where we're going to have a lot of money between my investors and myself and my partners. We're going to have a lot of money, almost $100 million of cash that we're going to have back. And so I'm going to be more in a money position. So what I'm doing from other asset classes, I'm not investing. I'm investing passively in other operators.
Got it.
And I have a piece of the equity in that project because I'm raising the money and then deploying it through my investment fund into other deals. And we'll do some mentorship on the broad scale of things. I do have some amazing relationships in some other asset classes. So I know some great people there. But that's all I'm doing. I am not operating self-storage myself.
Got it. Let me ask you a quick question about storage, because other people have had questions. What are you seeing? I know it's relatively early on for you as far as investing in storage, passively at least. What are you seeing in storage that you like that maybe you don't get or see in multifamily?
I mean, the obvious one is like you don't have tenants, right? Yeah. Or you don't have tenants who live on property. And so you're not you don't succumb to the landlord-tenant laws that you do in New York and California and Seattle and those areas where it's tough to be a residential landlord. I will not buy multifamily in any of those kind of like the tenant-friendly markets. But I would buy self-storage. Like I'm doing a self-storage development in New Jersey. And it is like, it's easy. Somebody doesn't pay, you put another lock on their unit, you keep all their crap if they don't come out and catch up, right?
Yep.
So it's so easy. It's easy to build. It's easy to rent. It's like people don't get rid of it because it's almost like a gym membership. It's like, well, you know, it's, you know, $60 a month. I'm using it. I don't want to have to go out and haul a bunch of other crap. I'll probably. And so it's not enough of an expense where people then get rid of it in the downturn. And it does really, really well. And I think like I'm only in self-storage. I don't have any other kind of like warehouse space, but I like warehouse altogether as an asset. Like there's four major asset classes. One is like residential, which is multifamily apartments, mobile homes. Mm-hmm. Two is office and medical, which I think is going to get spun on its head with all the Zoom stuff going on.
Yep.
Three is retail and hospitality, getting crushed right now. Right. And I think we'll continue to get crushed with Amazon and everything else that's going on. And then the last one's like warehouse, self-storage, things like that. And so I like the residential side and I like the warehouse side of things. And so self-storage falls into that.
Yep.
I'm not like, here's the thing. If there's a massive hotel in a primo location at 20 cents on the dollar, I'm buying it. Right. I'll get into any asset class at a low enough basis, but I'm going to bring in an operating partner who knows how to run that. I'm not running it, not with my team.
Smart.
And you've heard Mark Evans say this all the time, is like, find the who to do the how, right? Find the who to do the what. And it's not going to be Tim, because old Tim used to be like, let's find some vacation rentals and we'll manage it ourselves, right? Old Tim said, let's get into office buildings and we'll manage it ourselves. New Tim doesn't say that anymore. After getting my ass handed to me several times over the past several years,
you.
Right. Now I'm like, who is the best to operate this? I found the great deal. I can bring the money. I can sponsor the loan. I just need an operator, right? Let me kick them some equity so that way they're in the same boat, rowing in the same direction as me.
Yep.
Want to get this thing operating, and they're only compensated if the property performs, you know? And so, hey, Brenna, dude, you got deals, man. I got money. So you let me know.
Yeah,
happy to invest with great operators.
Yeah,
and then his other question was what?
Yeah, so let me. This is an interesting one. What is your why for building a large empire versus more of a lifestyle mindset?
Yeah, I think you can do both.
Yep, agreed.
I don't think you have to do one or the other. I'm moving down to Charleston, South Carolina next month. My entire team's in Cleveland, Ohio. If I have phone and internet, I can do business from anywhere in the country. And I really am not needed like more. I only go into the office about 6 hours, 3 or 4 days a week anyways.
I'm glad you said that, because I think at the root, because I'm very familiar with Life in Air and what they teach, I think at the root of his question, Tim, is that he wants to know that you can still build a big empire and not have to sacrifice your life in the process in order to have the biggest building in town. And you already answered it. You can have both. You just got to be very smart, intentional, and strategic about how you go about it. But dude, you and I think we would agree here. We see a lot of people, at least I do, I don't want to put words in your mouth, that are, you know, working 16, 18 hour days with no end in sight just to make more money and have, you know, a bunch of assets and build an empire, but yet they're sacrificing their time with their kids or their loved ones, or their health is just out of balance. And they're sacrificing the most important things in life to have something. And yet they say, I'm doing it for my family, or I'm doing it so that I can someday, you know what I'm saying? And I think that's the root of his question is, you know, make sure you're not sacrificing what's most important to you, whatever that may be, in an effort to have the biggest empire.
So I want to make 2 points on this. First is the hard work fallacy. And although hard work is very important, it's not the leading indicator of success. Like it's just not. Like I work my tail off for a long time, and I don't work as hard as I do today as I did back then. And I make way more money today than I did back then. Yeah. And you know, if hard work was everything, then the people who clean hotel rooms, right, would be the richest people out there. The people who take care of elderly in nursing homes would be the richest people out there. Janitors would be super rich. Washing machines would be super rich, right? Like there's a lot. I think about Christmas Vacation. Washing
machines would be super rich. I like that one.
You know, like I got that from Christmas Vacation when
one of my favorite don't work.
And then the daughter's like, he worked really hard, Grandpa. And he goes, so do washing machines. You know? And it's true though. It's accurate. Like you think about how hard dishwashers work, right? And like, why aren't they rich? And so I'm like, it's not that. You got to work smart, dude. Like you have, and I remember hearing Donald Trump actually say this before, way before he was ever president, 10, 15 years ago. And he's like, it's not like the thing in order to be super successful, you got to be smart. You got to think in an efficient manner. You got to be wise about your decision making. You got to and it comes from two things. It comes from being smart, but also being wise. And you get wisdom from being in the game. The longer you're in it, the wiser you get, and the harder it is to pull the wool over your eyes, right? And the more mistakes you make, and that way you get more refined and you sharpen the axe over and over and over again. So some of it comes from studying. But it's just, again, it goes back to asking good questions too. So, no, I mean, I think you could build a massive business. I've surrounded myself with A players. My team is just rock star. My chief investment officer, my chief operating officer, my director of acquisitions, my director of marketing, my entire, director of property management, rock stars, all of them, A players. And none of them make more than $50,000 a year, 50. That's their salary. But they all have profit share or equity in my deals.
There you go.
Why? Because I want lifestyle. I want to build a big ass business, but I don't need 100% of it. I'd rather have a quarter of a watermelon than 100% of a grape.
There's the Tim. So you dropped out nugget the first time you were on my podcast, which is, by the way, it's pretty cool to know that I was the first podcast that you were on, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, man.
And dude, you said that and literally my head was like I it just totally hit me right between the eyes. And I think at the time you said better to have 50% of a watermelon than 100% of the grape. Same thing.
Love it. Well, I mean, it's just, you realize Jeff Bezos only owns 11% of Amazon, and he'll be the first trillionaire in the world.
In like the next 7, 8, 9 years or something, he's expected to be a trillionaire.
Dude, he went from he got friggin' divorced and is worth $200 billion now.
Stupid.
In the past 6-12 months.
Insane.
Dude, like, if it's 7 years from now, dude, I would be surprised if it's 7 years from now. I would expect it in the next 24 months.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? It's kind of the Roger Bannister effect. Is nobody had run the 4 minute mile until he did it. And then all of a sudden you had a bunch of people running the 4 minute mile. And even things like that should get you. You might not want to be a billionaire or trillionaire, but like anything and everything is possible, but you have to be very purposeful and intentional. And I think it all starts, in my opinion, with you got to get clear on what you want, why you want it, and then build a plan to go get it. But anything is possible. And that should give you peace of mind, really, that anything you want that's out there, you can have. You just got to be very purposeful about it. Let me bounce over here. My Facebook group, I got a couple of questions. Best advice for someone who's starting from scratch?
In real estate?
They didn't specify, but yeah, I would assume.
Well, I mean,
Maria Felix, by the way, asked that question. I don't know if you know her.
Yeah, for me, I would definitely get in a mastermind of some sort, right? You're investing in yourself. You're going to see a return on investment. Get involved in the mastermind. It's not a cost to getting in. It's actually an investment to keep low level thinkers out, right? You know, everybody who's willing to invest in themselves meets some certain level of mindset. Mm-hmm. I think masterminds are so critical. So that's the first thing that I would do. And then from a technical element, I would get really good at raising money and finding deals.
Okay.
If you're involved in real estate, you're doing those two things. You can do deals whether the market's up or the market's down.
That's right.
Usually those two things work inversely. 12 months ago, real easy to find money, really hard to find deals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 12 months from now, probably going to be harder to find money, easier to find deals. So if you're good at doing both of those things, you can do deals in all capacities.
And Tim, a big part of this is a self-awareness game, right? Like, what are you good at? Well, what's your unique ability? And then lean into that, right? Awesome. So Kia Charles, I would like to know his approach to acquiring multi-unit buildings in this climate. So, you know, in this pandemic that we're still in, who knows how long we're going to be in this pandemic. How have you adjusted, or everyone uses the word pivoted these days, right? How have you pivoted as far as how you acquire these units?
Dude, I'm doing the same thing. I'm just keep on having conversations, right? Like, I don't work through brokers mostly. There's a couple of markets where I'm one of the bigger buyers in town. So I do have broker relationships just because I have a reputation. But most markets, we're finding off-market direct-to-seller deals by driving for dollars, by dialing for dollars. We use something called Reonomy. It's kind of like a CoStar. And we extract owner content information and we do text message blasting. That's where we get between that and referrals of like bird dogs. That's where we get almost all of our deals.
What's it called? Reonomy?
Reonomy. Yeah. If anybody, like you guys want, we don't get paid, like, but we have kind of like an affiliate with them where my students get a discount with them. Like, they don't pay us anything, but I can at least get you guys a deal on it if anybody wants that. So
okay,
it's a pretty sweet thing. So just shoot me a message and I'll connect you with our girl Gabrielle over there.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, hey guys, we're going to start wrapping up here in the next 5 to 10 minutes or so. If you guys want to connect with Tim, he's all over Facebook. Make sure, Tim, do you have is it facebook.com/ like Tim
Bratz?
Okay. TL Bratz?
Yeah. TL Bratz.
Okay, TL Bratz, or you can head over to legacywealthholdings.com, connect with Tim, and make sure that you add him on Facebook, because again, the guy's just always dropping nuggets. As you can see, just a genuine guy that's always putting out really, really valuable information. So highly encourage you guys connect with Tim offline as well. Let me fire over here to StreamYard. I got some questions that have come in. All right. By the way, thank you for all the love. David Roman, Haim, what's up, guys? Paul Vincent, Bo Hollis, Facebook user. I wish I knew who you were, but hey, Tim. Hey, Tim, how come wholesaling is not big in the commercial space? So I guess he's asking, why aren't people wholesaling apartment building, storage, whatever?
Yeah. So, I mean, we do. It's just, it's definitely more nuances, right? Like when you're flipping houses, you get a cash buyer to come in and they pay you cash. It's easy because they're small deals, a couple hundred thousand dollars, whatever. In commercial, you're talking about big deals and there's not a lot of cash buyers for a $10, $15, $20 million deal. It's very easy actually to wholesale smaller multi under $1 million, I would say is kind of like that threshold. So we typically wholesale a lot of stuff in Cleveland under $1 million. Anything that's over $1 million, they're getting a loan. It's hard to do. We'll sign like a fee agreement and say, hey, let me just hand it off to you. It's usually one of my students that we sell buildings to. It was like, hey, let me hand it off to you. Pay me 2% if and when this thing closes. And that way I don't muddy up the water. If it closes, great. It's a cute couple extra bucks, keeps the lights on for a little bit longer. But if it doesn't, I don't really care. It's just, we come across a lot of leads. I'm actually partnering up with a local buddy who's in my mastermind, and we're giving him all of our wholesale leads, and we're just going to kind of let him run with the wholesale business. So again, dude, it goes back to Brendan's question of like, just staying in your lane kind of a thing, knowing what you're really good at, and then finding the person, finding the who to do the how. So now I'm finding somebody else who can run that element. Because what I don't want is to take my acquisitions guy away from buying our own deals because he's worried about flipping a 15 unit apartment building
in a
C-minus area.
Got it. Kia, appreciate your engagement on here. Tim, what size buildings do you invest? Unit count, thanks.
Yeah, I mean, typically I'm buying 100 plus units in landlord friendly states, typically in like the Southeast. Most of my portfolio is in South Carolina and Georgia, like 80% of it. But I have stuff in 11, no, it's probably 70% is in South Carolina and Georgia. I have a lot of stuff in the Southeast. I have some stuff in North Carolina, Florida, Alabama, Illinois, Ohio, New Jersey, Texas, Oklahoma, and Louisiana.
Let me ask you this, brother. I put this in the post. What's been the worst deal you've ever done? And let's focus specifically on multifamily. What's been the worst multifamily you've ever done? Why and how'd you exit that thing? Assuming
I was going to say, I've done a bunch of bad single family stuff. I was a bad flipper, dude. Not my thing at all. Here's what's awesome about, let me give you a story. Bought a 40 unit apartment building about 3 years ago, from a guy that I knew. He had 40 units here in Cleveland. I bought it and, it was 80% occupied. I was like, cool. I got to flip whatever, 8-9 units and turn those over to get them occupied. I'm like, I'm going to flip this building. I can make $300,000 in 6 months, game over and move on and make a couple bucks. Right. Big learning lesson. Occupancy, physical occupancy is not the same as economic occupancy.
Okay. Talk about the difference for those that don't know.
When I bought it, economic occupancy means how much rent is being collected. mm-hmm. only 11 people were paying rent.
So what, a 40 unit, you said?
On a 40 unit building. There were 35 people occupied, but there were, it was a little over 40. It was like 44 units. 35 units were occupied, 11 were paying. So not only did I have to flip those 9 units that were vacant, but then I had to flip another 24 units, not only flip them and invest in them, but I had to pay for attorney's fees. Uh-huh. And I didn't have the rent coming in that I thought would be coming in. So now I had all these holding costs as well. And it turned into, dude, just a debacle. I owned it for a year and a half. I ended up writing a check for almost $50,000 to get rid of the property.
That actually doesn't sound like a lot considering what you're telling me.
It's because here's the thing. If I turned around, I sold it as it was, I would have lost $500,000. Right. So I had it. It's one of these things, like during the last downturn, they were building the Wynn Hotel and the Encore, you know, mm-hmm. and dude, like they stopped construction and they all looked at it and they're like, dude, the only way out of this is to invest into it to get out of it.
Yeah.
Right. To not take as big of a loss as they did. Right. And so, That's what I had to end up doing. So we had to just keep on investing into it. So we didn't take a $500,000 loss. And then we were able to turn around and sell it. And I wrote a check for 40 grand. My investor did not lose any money. He did not make any money, but he got all of his money back. And then I gave him equity in another deal just to try to like be good for it. You know,
always take care of your people. Always take care of your investors. Yeah. Take care of them.
Yeah. But here's the magic in multifamily though. I had it occupied. So now it was at 90% occupancy. I could have held on to it for another 2 years and then sold it and broke even on it. I would have paid down enough principal. Rents would have been bumped up enough where then after a year, 2 years of holding it,
yep.
I would be able to sell it and break even on it. That's the beauty in getting into multifamily. It's like you can F this thing up pretty bad. And worst case scenario, you'll just let it cash flow longer, pay down more principal, let it appreciate over time. And all of a sudden, you made a bunch of money on it. It's crazy how it works, but it's a very insulated asset.
Got it. And you got to be able to just obviously withstand some of the valleys that you're going to go through in this business, if assuming you don't buy right, obviously. Mm-hmm. Let me see. DeAndre Reynolds, does your virtual classes go through wholesaling multifamily?
Yeah.
By the way, before you answer that, thank you. He's asking this from YouTube. So if you guys head over to youtube.com/AlexPardo, you can also join these lives in the future from YouTube. So go ahead, man. Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about that. Okay. It used to be everything, like how to run and operate apartments A to Z. And it was like a lot. It was like a fire hose of information of people. And so what we've done is kind of scale it back to really just finding deals, underwriting those deals, doing due diligence on them, and then creatively structuring like the funding and the financing. Okay. And then we put together exit strategies, and wholesaling is one of the exit strategies that we talk about. We don't go, you know, most of the people that come out to my events understand some basic fundamentals of real estate. So they understand contract assignments. They understand, you know, transactional funding and A to B and B to C type closings and all that kind of stuff. So, I don't teach at this level. I teach at this level so that way everybody can rise up and I can teach at the highest level and it really stretches some of the more newbies. But it's really kind of like it's a higher level coaching type thing.
Yep, I get it. Brendan, by the way, thanks guys. Tim and I had it. So I guess you did connect with Brendan.
Yeah.
So, okay.
He was at my event last week, yeah.
Cool. Caleb, appreciate the love, brother. Thank you so much. Lissandro, you know, we talked about the power of masterminds. He invested in Ascend several months back and has seen the rewards now. So it's crazy, man. When you pay attention and you almost like rise to another level that you didn't even mm-hmm. there. Right. So, again, power of masterminds.
It's one of the biggest things that I'm seeing in my life over the past, I don't know, 24 months is the power of putting constraints on yourself.
Talk about that.
The more you put a constraint on yourself, I'll give you an example. Every time there's a constraint, a big hurdle for me to get through, dude, I have so much momentum that comes out of it. So like about a year after the interview that I did with you mm-hmm. in June 2008, I had the biggest deal of my life going down. It was 730 units on a portfolio down in Georgia. And I had $4 million raised for that. And my investor bailed on Friday before the Monday closing. I had zero money.
Talk about stress.
Dude, I had to raise $4 million in 48 hours. I've never raised more than $1 million before, and I had many months to do $1 million. And so I'm like, holy cow, man. Like, what am I going to do? And that constraint, it required me to go and put exactly how I raise money today and put all these efficiencies, because I couldn't talk to that many people in a 48-hour period. So I ended up going through this process of like, okay, let me think through this. And what are the questions that people are going to be asking? And how can I get them the information in the simplest manner possible? So that way I'm not wasting their time and I don't have to hop on a phone call with them. Blah, blah. And so it ended up turning into like this. I developed this 3-page investment summary that gives high-level overview on our deals.
Yeah.
Third grade simple, dude. It's not like these offering memorandums that you see from all these different firms that just make people like, I don't know what to do, and they throw it down, right? So investment summary, putting a Dropbox folder of all this due diligence stuff together on these properties, and just like the way that I structured it and how I was able to kind of refine everything came from that constraint. You know, another thing, shit happens to me all the time, man. 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago on Friday, it was like July, I don't know, 11th, 10th, or whatever it was, just a couple of weeks ago. Investor calls me at 10 p.m. on Friday night and tells me he needs $3 million back for a short-term loan that he gave so that way he could pay his tax bill, because he just talked to his CPA and he needed $3 million by July 15th, which was Monday, but he needed to put it in a certain account and move it over and whatever else. So
he called you Friday night at 10 p.m. and he needed $3 million out of a deal. I'm assuming he had invested in one of your deals and he needed that by Monday to pay a tax bill.
Yeah, to pay his tax bill by Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever it was.
Okay.
So, dude. Like the fortunate part was he was not like an equity investor. He was a first lien position holder. And so I can post that on social media. So I was like, hey guys, here's what the deal is. First lien position. Here's what the return is. Here's what the asset is. And dude, I was in a constraint. And so I post on social media and I shoot out some messages to my investors. And do you have any idea how many seeds were planted? Dude, I raised $18 million off of that.
Incredible.
$18 million. I could only deploy $3 million, right? I have another $15 million of money that I was never talking to, that I would have never known about if I wasn't faced with that constraint. So I actually get a little bit excited whenever this kind of stuff, like it's a little bit disheartening when it initially happens for the first 10 minutes. And I'm like, you know what? All these other times I faced constraints, there was massive breakthroughs, like quantum leaps forward. And I was just like, it's amazing what happens. And so being in a mastermind is part of that constraint. It's like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know if I can invest 20 grand, 30 grand, whatever it is. And to get involved in this mastermind, and then all of a sudden you do, and it's like it quantum leaps forward.
But Tim, you want to know the last point out before we end is that it's all perspective. And when we have these constraints or when we have the adversity, it's how you choose to see it. Right? Because you could have easily like bitched and complained and like gotten pissed at this investor and been like, no, I can't do it. And you kind of like lock yourself in. $18 million in money wouldn't have come had you taken approach in that mindset. But the fact that you were willing to work with them, that constraint forced you to grow. And so let that be a learning lesson, not just for you guys watching this and listening to the future, but for me too. Like adversity sometimes is like, that's when you're meant to grow. So when things happen to you, always ask, you know, maybe to tie this whole thing, put a bow on this podcast and on this live, it's the power of asking yourself the right questions. So when these constraints happen, when the adversity is, how am I meant to grow and learn from this? What am I supposed to learn? What am I supposed, you know what I mean? And so now you start to ask yourself different questions and then opportunities come from that. So just don't lock yourself in to when things happen that are less than ideal, be careful in how you choose to see that because it's a choice. You know, and good can come of it or bad can come of it. It's up to you.
Love that.
Yep. So my boy, Steve Cavanaugh, what's up, Tim? I know you know Steve.
What's up, Steve? How you doing, buddy?
Lee, 100% agree on that. Guys, thank you so much. Great stuff. Really appreciate the questions, the engagement. Tim, I can't say enough good things about you, man. You're just a genuine dude. I'm grateful to have your friendship and your counsel from time to time. So guys, connect with Tim, legacywealthholdings.com. Make sure you friend request him if you're not friends on Facebook. Dude, what else? How else can we serve you? How can we help you? And dude, just tell us what you have going on and what we can do to help.
Yeah, man, just connect with me. And if there's anything that I can help with, please don't hesitate to reach out. Oh, I want to do a shameless plug. Yeah. You just developed a bunch of children's books.
I saw that.
Yeah, yeah. So this is something we're really, dude, it's been 3 years in the making.
What's the website?
It's called littlelegacylibrary.com. littlelegacylibrary.com. And check it out. I was on a flight back from a mastermind actually down in Florida. And as I'm sitting on this thing on the plane reading The Magic of Thinking Big by David Schwartz, my daughter's 2 years old at the time. I'm like, dude, can you imagine if you had these principles, these thought principles and mindset when you were, dude, at the most malleable personality for, you know, forming ages of 5, 6, 7 years old. And I get off the flight and I start looking up children's personal development books, nothing, dude. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to write these things. But I was a mule, right? I was doing all the work myself. I didn't really understand how to build the team out. I was in that whole process. And about a year and a half ago, found the who to do the how. And I partnered up with one of my best girlfriends from high school and my wife. And so they're writing the books. I kind of come in from a consultative support standpoint. And so we have our first book out, which is called Think Big and Go to Baseball Camp. It's based on Think and Grow Rich.
Okay.
And all the characters are named after like the titans of industry, like Ford off of, you know, Henry Ford, and Rocky off of John D. Rockefeller, and Andrew off of Andrew Carnegie, and Morgan off of J.P. Morgan. And so like there's some really cool like links to the past and these titans of industry and these thought principles and philosophies of all these amazing personal development books. So the next one, it's going to be coming out next month, is going to be how to win class president and influence peers. So
based off of peers, I like it. Yeah.
Based off of how to win friends and influence people, right? And so, and then we have the richest kid in the neighborhood, like that's based off of Richest Man in Babylon. And then we have Power of Positive, Power of Positivity. I don't know what to call it yet, but off of Power of Positive Thinking from,
hats off.
So yeah, we got all these amazing things, and we have The Magic of Thinking Big by David Schwartz. So we got 5 books coming out before the end of the year, and we're really, really pumped up. They're so good. They're so like, I didn't write them, so I can say that they're good, right? My wife wrote them and my friend wrote them, and there's a lot of cool stuff. So if you guys want to instill amazing thought principles into your kids, and it's like a perfect gift for a baby shower or, you know, a birthday present or whatever, it's good stuff. So yeah, check that out. Appreciate it.
Here's what I'm going to do. I wasn't planning on this, but, and I recently saw that you posted about this. For the first 5 people that share this broadcast on Facebook, write a little note, tag myself, tag Tim. For the first 5 people that share this, just send me a message, give me your address, and I'll ship you over. I'm going to buy a bunch of books and I'll ship you over the book. So, first 5 people that share this broadcast and send me the message, you got to make sure that you tag Tim and I. So, Tim, brother,
I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
Oh man. Always here to support you. However I can, man, I'll buy a bunch of books and, I look forward to reading it myself and, you know, reading it to my girls. So thank you for everything you do, man. Thank you, man.
You are a constant giver and, a beacon of light, man, in a world of cloudy skies, right? So appreciate you, man. You do amazing things and I appreciate your friendship. So thanks for having me, buddy.
Awesome. Awesome. And guys, thank you for joining the live. And for those of you who listen to this on the Flip Empire Show in the future, I appreciate you. This is why I do it for you guys. So anything that we can do, we're here to help. And I know Tim feels the same way. So anything you need, just reach out to us. And Tim, my man, I know we'll be in contact. I'll catch you soon. All right.
Thanks, buddy.
Awesome. Take care, guys.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.